In this episode, we're talking about hacking, slashing, and blasting magical spells through your dreams. We're talking about Shape of Dreams. This and more on Indie Game Arcade. Welcome, everyone, to Indie Game Arcade, a podcast that deep dives into the latest and greatest indie games. My name is Chris.
I'm Joseph.
And I got to tell you something real quick, Joseph. I'm very excited about this. So I got to see art of one of the characters that I'm voicing in an upcoming indie game. I have zero idea when this game is coming out. I think there's a lot of work to be done, but I've been doing voiceover for this character for like a year and a half.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
But you haven't, like, you didn't have any idea what he looked like yet?
I had seen concept art of him before, but I just now saw finished artwork of him. And I gotta say, man, this is the only time I will have a full head of hair and abs. So I am so excited to have abs.
Oh, man.
It's
pretty nice.
Hey, let me tell you, this is the best I've ever looked. And even if it's in 2D form, I'm gonna take it.
That's awesome, though.
Yeah.
Are you able to say what the game is yet or no?
I don't know if if the developer is ready for me to share it yet. We've talked about
maybe not then.
Yeah, we've talked about it a little bit, and eventually we're gonna share it on the show and stuff like that. But I'm not sure if he's completely ready yet. So I'm gonna give him a little bit of time, talk to him a little more. But yeah, I'm very excited for this to come out. So.
That's awesome.
More excited just to see myself with some abs. Dude, and it's like an 8-pack. That's like an 8-pack of abs. I can't even get one in real life, man. So I'm getting spoiled.
Hopefully there's some sequels.
Heck,
and you can keep it going.
Hey, before we get started on our main topic, we're going to be doing a giveaway this week with a Steam key for Rogue Labyrinth. So huge thank you to the indie dev team at T-Witch Games for reaching out and providing it to share with all of you listeners. But I can't make it that easy to just, you know, give it to you, right? You got to keep listening for a little bit to this episode for the keyword, then tag us with it on social media. The winner is going to be announced on Saturday. All you need is a Steam account and a way for us to send you the key. So keep on listening to this episode and catch the keyword later so you can win a copy of Rogue Labyrinth, the game that we talked about just a couple weeks ago. Super, super fun. Me and Joseph have both played it. We love it to death. It was such a unique and interesting game that had so many cool mechanics and just like such an interesting like progression to it too, with so many mini games and everything. So we were very, very excited about this opportunity.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever really played a roguelike, possibly ever, that was the combat that I like, plus all those like Mario Party-esque mini games. And I just thought that was so interesting. And it's most of them are actually really fun, too. There's some that I'm like, I could not get the hang of. There's one that's like, what is the like brick breaking game?
Yeah,
where you like hit a ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that one was just kept messing me up because like it was going so fast and I would usually be swinging like a slow weapon. So it's like, I'm not even equipped to do this or I'm not fast enough. So that's partially on me. But yeah, I had fun with like most of those mini games. That one was just infuriating to me because I could not, the ball like sometimes would come back and like, get me out of bounds like three times before I even got to touch it. And it's like,
that's
oh
so
my
funny.
Gosh.
That's one of the ones I did really good on too, which is so funny to me. I love that one.
Yeah. Everything else I like super enjoyed. I am still playing through that game actually, cause I still need to beat the next few.
Oh yeah. You got to get to the
difficulty levels.
Next rank.
What am I at now? B, I think. So I need to get through
A rank.
B, and then there's probably S rank even. So I'm going to go for that. And I'll report back once I do.
Yeah, so keep listening. Listen for the keyword. I'll tell you what it is a little bit later, and then you can win your copy for free. What's more impressive, too, is after having talked with them, learned it was just a team of two that worked on this game, which is crazy for the amount of stuff.
That's insane.
Yeah. Can't even believe it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it was like I said when we were first talking about it, just feels like a passion project, or like there's so much love put into this.
Yes.
And obviously honoring a lot of the games that I enjoy. So yeah, I'm totally into that one.
Yeah. So thank you very much, Shala, who's the one that sent the key to us. And so everyone else, you should also thank Shala for sending us this key. So it gives you the opportunity to play this game for free. But let's get into our topic for the episode.
Game starts!
So Shape of Dreams was released on September 10th, 2025. This was developed by Lizard Smoothie, which is one of the coolest names you could ever have for a development company. Published by NeoWiz, which is also kind of cool. Retails for $24.99. And for a quick description, this is a fast-paced action roguelike blending MOBA and action RPG elements where you can perform co-op or solo runs, collecting memories and essences, which are basically your abilities and modifiers, while finding through procedurally generated dreamscapes. This is a game that I had brought up last episode or two episodes ago? One of those two.
It had to be like a few episodes ago.
Yeah. So I brought it up briefly and kind of like talked about a little bit of the basics, but it was like one of those where I was just like, there's so much to it. And I felt like the small amount of time I got to play it was not going to be enough to do it justice, because I felt like this was a much, like, it was such a good game and I didn't have enough, like, I didn't get it to spend enough time with it. So I was like, we need to come back to this one. And thankfully, that's where you spent a lot of your time this past week, was playing this. So you are bringing it back full circle.
Yeah. Any of the time that I wasn't playing Silksong, I was playing this, just trying to, one, progress through it, two, obviously beat a run, and three, unlock the characters. There's so many cool characters in this. They all play so differently. That's what's really fun about it.
My favorite character, at least by design, and I don't know like her name, but it's the one that has like the kind of like the big stone slab behind her that's kind of got like the multiple colors and stuff like that, like the shimmer to it. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Was she one of the like characters that's unlocked from the start? Because I don't know if I have her yet.
No, she's not like one of the starting characters. She's like, you have to unlock her farther in.
Because I have I have all but two characters, I think. There's a puppet guy I'm missing, and then just one other. So I don't know. Maybe I'm missing that one.
Bismuth.
No, I definitely do not have her yet.
Yeah, she looks really cool. Ubar also looks awesome. I mean, to be honest, like there's not a single character in this that doesn't have a really good design.
Yeah, my favorite to play as, even though, okay, it'll tell you how hard they are to play as well. With Lacerta, the first guy, the lizard dude, being the easy one to play. Like he's a good like all around character and he has range, which is always helpful. But I like playing Mist the most, which is this like... this woman dressed in, she's a knight.
She's kind of like a Valkyrie, sort of, like in
sort
design.
Sort of Valkyrie-esque, but it's definitely, your primary attack is melee.
Yeah.
Everything is like melee-based. Obviously, you can pick up like different sort of skills that can be ranged to, but the majority of your attacks are going to be melee based or dash based or something like that. And so she is challenging to play at times because she's a little bit slow and has to be like up in their face. So a lot of these enemies have just AOE things that will start to charge up. And so if I'm out of dashes, then I'm kind of like stuck in there. She can take a lot of damage and can do a lot of damage close up, but the trade-off is that she is slow and it's harder for her to like dash out of the way. Whereas Lacerta, the first dude, is all about just being at range and he has a lot of mobility. So that's even though he can't take a hit as well, he is mainly just avoiding them altogether, whereas she's just up in the fray, which is how I like to play usually anyway. And so a lot of my time has been spent playing Mist, the knight.
Yeah, that's who I played the most too, was Mist. I do like Lacerta. Like he does feel a lot faster, a lot more fluid, But like you, you know, whenever I start a game for the first time, especially like if we're going like default fantasy kind of setting thing, like barbarian is usually like the route I go almost every time for a starter character. Because, like, you know, that's usually the more tankier thing. I want to be able to get in the fray so that I can kind of understand enemy HP layout, like things like that, with a little bit more nuance. So I want to be able to just kind of hop in and go a little bit nuts with things. And then sort of like, you know, I'll branch out into other kind of like character classes and stuff later once I understand more nuance to the game. But it's like, yeah, those like brawler kind of characters are usually my first starting points.
The interesting part, at least for this game, is that the brawler characters are going to be the harder ones to play. And I know you shy away from hard games or like hard mode.
Yeah.
But you're defaulting to hard mode if you're doing melee in this game, at least.
Yeah. Especially because like so much of it relies on dodging. And Mist is definitely harder to dodge with than some of the other characters, for sure.
Yeah. And there are ways to mitigate that. She can get like that on a faster recharge. Okay. So skill wise, did we even say like what this game was? So this game,
run through
if
it.
You didn't hear us talk about it before, is an action roguelike isometric view. So I guess like Hades perspective, but it's zoomed out a little bit more than that. And it is specifically, I understand the MOBA like comparison now because of the way the attacks work, especially some of the charge attacks.
Sure.
It will have like a, like for the, like the tank character Vesper, he has this one of his default attacks, I think, is like this sword that kind of stretches out. And the longer you hold it, like the longer it stretches out to a point. But that feels very like MOBA coded because that's how a lot of the attacks work there.
Yeah.
And I think just in the way that you are using these attacks, so it's not as much about the gameplay as it is the fluidity of the attacking and also, you know, having the enemies very clearly telegraph their moves and you can avoid them if you're fast enough. So I don't know. I understand the MOBA comparison just by playing the combat aspect of it, at least. Obviously, it's much different from a true MOBA.
Yeah.
If you were playing with like three friends, then it might start to feel like that. It might start to feel like you're going through that sort of thing. But it's not a direct comparison, obviously.
Yeah, and that's what was tripping me up when we talked about it the first time. Because when you were asking me, like, well, what about the gameplay makes it feel MOBA? And I'm like, dude, like, there isn't much that reminds me of a MOBA.
I guess if you wanted to compare it to one, it would be like a faster paced one if all you're doing is jungling, because like every other aspect of it is non-MOBA.
Yeah, exactly. So like, tell me a little bit about like, so you played it a lot more. How far did you get? And so kind of like, what were some of your experiences with it as far as like the progression, some of the bosses, etc.?
So I will say that, okay, so just to lay it out, you start off, you're in a dream, essentially. That's the setup, like without going into great detail of that, you're in kind of a dreamscape. And so a lot of the environments, like every zone you go to, there's three zones before you reach the boss. And I think they are randomized to some degree, like the latter two, because I feel like, yeah, I have gone to some different ones and fought some different bosses without like intending to. So it wasn't like I was like shooting for that. You just kind of end up in like a like the very first one is static and you're going to fight the same boss. But then the other two, at least the second one, feels like interchangeable, because I know I fought like a different boss in the second realm. And third one is where you fight the I think the boss. I haven't beaten him yet, but I've gotten to him a couple times. And well, I got to him on my first run when I was using the lizard dude. And actually both times I got to him, once with the lizard, once with with Mist, I died at the exact same point, because
once
he hits about 25% HP left, he just starts going like crazy.
Yeah.
And then I just could not stand up to his onslaught. I just wasn't ready for it. And especially with Mist, I just could not get out of the way. So I think there's probably some meta progression that I might need to do specifically with her, and or I just need to play an easier character at first to try to get used to his movement before I can really confidently step in there with the melee character and succeed. I'm not sure yet, but yeah, so I've gotten quite a ways the few times I have played all the way through it. And my experience has been, I love the customization aspect of it because it seems just like there's so much here customization wise. So at first you're going to be, you start out with your two memories, which are what the skills are called. And those are kind of base memories for each character. They each start with two different ones. They are able to upgrade to different versions of those as they develop their skill tree in the like outside of the runs thing. That's where it's like a constellation, and they're outside of the actual run constellation skill tree has branching paths, and you can put different sort of like dream crystals, whatever those are called, into those.
Yeah,
they're all color coded. Yeah, essences, and they're all color coded a different way. So it's like red is generally like attack damage. I don't remember what the other colors are off the top of my head, but it's like attack damage, health, you know, survivability, and then like ability damage, which is what your memory skills are doing.
Yeah.
So that's all like the meta progression aspect of it. That seems very deep, and I haven't really gotten into that much personally. But when you're in a run, you are trying to fill up, you have four total slots of memories you can fill. You can exchange your starting memories if you want to, if you don't want to use them or you want to gear towards something else. Like, let's say I wanted to go like a full shadow arts, then I just kept finding like shadow memories, and I could replace those and just really power up my shadow as much as you can with RNG anyway, because within those memories, you're also able to power them up. Like, I don't even know how many times, but I've gotten one up to like level 10.
Wow.
And I don't know if that was the last level that it could even go. So it's like, you can really like make some of those pack a punch or try to keep them balanced out or whatever one you end up using the most. That's usually what I really try to focus on. But even within that, you can then put three or four little crystals.
Yeah, three.
Three crystals, yeah, in each of them that also have different kind of sub skills to them, or like they'll power it up in some way. Like, let's say I have like a fire dash, and then I get a crystal that's like, this makes all fire damage, or if the enemy is burning, then this adds extra damage or whatever, and
yeah,
makes all fire damage do 30% more or something. So it's like, okay, cool. Well, I'm going to put that in my fire dash skill because that's going to trigger itself, basically.
Yeah.
And there are a variety of things. I even got a cool one like on my last run that was like a shadow crystal that's like, it made my basic attacks, because you do have your basic attack too. That's what you're doing when you're just like basically aiming at an enemy, is your basic auto attack. It made my basic attacks into shadow, and then it made the skill that I actually put the crystal on trigger a extra damage and a heal for myself of 4% of my health, at least starting whenever I had three stacks of shadow on the enemy. And so it was cool that it was like affecting not only the skill I put it in, but also changed the entire element of my basic attack to match that. So
that
was
so
just
sick.
Something that, yeah, made it just a really kind of cool, cohesive run. So then anytime I found shadow things or shadow skills, I would try to line those up in my tree or in my my skill as well, like my four skills. I would try to replace those so I could just have purely shadow when I could. And so that was a really fun run. Again, I got to the boss, and at the very end, I just couldn't, I couldn't do it. I just wasn't ready for that onslaught. So next time, though, I'm going to be like, okay, once he gets to this point, this much health, I really have to be careful because he goes crazy. That is one thing about the bosses, too. Like, you think you're ready for them just based off the way you've been fighting all these enemies, but they are very fast. Like, they will like dart to you and attack very quickly, faster than you are going to be ready for,
yeah,
if you haven't fought them before. And it just makes you have to adjust on the fly to like a different type of gameplay, or like right there, because fighting all the mobs you had previously won't like really set you up for the boss, at least in the normal mode or even the hard mode that I had played. The basic enemies are a lot squishier, and those, as long as you're careful, you shouldn't have any issue with.
You have to start thinking about, too, like, really conservatively with all of your abilities and stuff. Like, even just down to, like, your, you know, your dash and your, like, your ability to dodge and things like that. Because, like,
make sure you save your dash.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you are going to need it.
Yeah, because if you are using it too often, because it's like when you're fighting, like, regular mobs and stuff like that, like, I don't know. I'm one of those people that's apt to just dash all the time just to make sure that I keep myself out of trouble. Especially because I'm like one. I'm a very nervous player. If you haven't noticed,
yeah,
I second guess things a lot. So like when I'm playing a game like this or something like Hades or something, I'm dashing everywhere. I'm dashing, zipping all across the screen. But like in a situation like that, you cannot afford to waste a dash and have it on cooldown when something like that happens, or else that's it. You're done.
The enemy attacks are usually pretty well telegraphed, at least the strong ones. And they'll be just like big red, like either lines or circles or something that you have time to avoid. But because they're so well telegraphed and because they sometimes take a little while to actually charge up, if they do hit you, they do a ton of damage to you.
Yeah.
So it's telegraphing them because it's like, you better get out of the way. You can't afford to just eat this. At least not with some of the starting characters. There's a tankier character who can eat those a lot better. And that's actually part of his ability. He can't really dash, but he like pops up a shield. But you still don't want to be eating those hits because they will add up quickly.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Even not on those bosses, but like in some of the other ones, when you just have a whole lot of mobs and stuff on the screen, the places that you can dash to, because the enemies are telegraphing those hits and you'll see like all the red circles like pop up all over the ground and stuff. Sometimes those little windows of like the places where you can, you know, land your character do get real small. So you gotta be real precise in where you end up.
And aiming wise, too, like this is not an auto aim kind of game. This is also where it's pretty mobile, like because it's unforgiving in that if you have a ranged attack, like I had one that was like a shadow, like, I don't know, some kind of shadow rifle shot thing. And even if I was just a little bit off to the left, the hitboxes are very sensitive and it just zipped right by everything. There's no homing or anything on your ranged attacks. It is like you aim and you don't have a reticle. You just have to trust your joystick aim enough to know where that thing is going to end up. So you can't really be nervously darting around. You need to be precise with those kind of shots.
So don't play like me, basically. Don't get nervous
and
like me.
We haven't even talked about yet the fact that the way that you're kind of getting a little bit pushed through the zones is you're being chased by hunters.
Oh, yeah.
By like dream hunters, which when they do catch up to you, one of the things that's happening is periodically, maybe every like 10 seconds, there will be this like barrage of just energy missiles that will fall from the sky. It will tell, like, you'll see little red circles all around you. So it's like easy enough to dodge those. But when you're in the middle of a combat with a lot of things, like, and that just comes to interrupt, like, it can be pretty like intense, especially once you start. So there's like 5 or 6 levels of like hunter danger level. The more you end up fighting them, the harder they will steadily get. And, I'm sure there's probably like a way to, I don't know, beat them or something, or at least like beat the like final difficulty of them. And I don't know what that would do. I haven't been brave enough to try to test that because I know at one point, I think I got up to like level 5 of it and they just like wiped the floor with me when I got into that level. It was not even on purpose. I just was like trying to get out and I trapped myself in like a little corner that was far away from the boss. So I had to kind of like try to ease my way around them, and I kept like accidentally falling into those little hunter zones, and so it's just getting harder and harder and harder, and I couldn't even reach the boss before they just like destroyed me when I got into that harder one.
Oh man.
But in addition to the barrage of shadow energy that's falling from the sky, there are also these like I think they're riding on like boars or something. It's what it looks like, at least from what I saw. It's just these little shadow figures are kind of like darting through in addition to the regular enemies that are on the level. And those are the hunters that are after you. And they come in different forms, but it's just, they're not in and of themselves that challenging. But the harder level of hunters you're fighting, obviously the more damage they're going to do and the faster they go. That's really what trips you up, is how fast they start coming at you if you're not ready for it. So that's what makes you, that's what incentivizes you to like play the risk reward of it all, of like, okay, I want to stay around in this zone so I can collect as much as I can and level up as much as I can before I go to the boss, but I can't like just dilly dally. I have to get over there within a reasonable time. I need to watch the hunters because it'll have a highlight over the zones that they are in. It turns like orange first, and then that's where the hunters have started, and then it will turn red like the closer they're getting or the harder they're getting. So it's like, okay, I need to just prioritize survival right now. So I can't get those other like unexplored little spots. I have to just go straight to the boss. So that's what also keeps the runs pretty succinct. Also, I would say the runs, at least so far, have taken about like 35 to 40 minutes. You really don't have time to take longer than that, at least in the starting, the ones I've done anyway.
I like when roguelikes put that in there so that you can't just like do things at your leisure, and it adds just a little bit more pressure to it. So when we go back to games like, I brought this up last time, which was Wild Bastards has that in there. The Ship of Fools had a very similar thing, which was like that co-op kind of pirate-ish one that you and I played for a while.
That was a fun one.
That game is so fun. I recommend that for anybody.
It's an interesting alternative to the basic, you have to commit to a choice where it's like, as you're going down a path in a normal roguelike, or not a normal, I say, but like a typical roguelike is just like, okay, I'm starting here and I have a branching path, three different places I can go. And once I commit to that one spot, I'm stuck on this path, the rest of those or whatever. And maybe you can branch off a little bit more later on. But this one, you can go back even through zones you've already, or even through like little spots you've already gone to, if you're trying to get to something else. So you can backtrack a little bit. But again, the pressure of the hunters being on your ass the whole time makes it where you don't usually want to do that unless you know you can avoid them or you're fighting an early level of them, so it won't be that bad.
Yeah.
So again, the risk reward really comes into play there. And I actually do appreciate that, because it, what excites me about that is like, oh, maybe I'll be strong enough one day where I can just like face these hunters like head on at the hardest level that they are. And I bet it like has some kind of really cool either item or reward or whatever if you're able to get to that level of them.
Heck yeah, man, it's such a good game. I want more people to see this game, to play this game. It's already won like a whole bunch of awards. So I mean, that just goes to show that, and this is the very first game from this developer too, I believe. So it's like, geez.
Yeah, what a game to start with.
Yeah, seriously.
And they had been doing early access since last year at some point, I think.
I think you're right.
I didn't dive into that at all, but I know that it was like overwhelmingly positively reviewed at the time. From that, right now, even the 1.0 release is very positive, and it has like a little over 1600 reviews. So people are liking it. I like it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to keep playing more of it. Like, it's a lot of fun, and it is challenging enough to where it's going to keep me like coming back for more, especially with how many layers there are to it, where I'm like, I don't even know what any of this is. And I'm still getting surprised by certain things that are happening. And I found out that I could accidentally damage the merchant when I went to the shop. Like, oh, so I wonder what happens if you were to kill the merchant.
Like,
there's all these things I'm not going to yet, but I'm curious about what would actually happen. So I just like, it's like the Baldur's Gate 3 thing where it's like, am I going to do my dark run this time? Like, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
So I like when I have those options. And like, we're just talking about the single player. This is up to four players. So if you have friends who want to play games with you, unlike us, then you definitely
have
should.
Friends. Oh, man.
We are friends and we don't even play games together.
No, I don't have time for you. I know exactly what will happen if you kill the merchant in that game, because I know you so well. You will feel so guilty. You're just going to feel real bad, and you're going to regret it.
What would make me feel even worse is if it's like, he's never coming back. and now his kids are sad. What it's like, oh no, he had
what
kids.
What if you do it and all of a sudden a little child runs up and is like, daddy, you would, oh my God.
Oh, I would uninstall the game.
Yeah.
I would cry the rest of the evening.
Don't kill the merchant, folks. Don't do it.
Don't kill the merchant. You'll feel terrible. I'd alter four out of it, see if I can recover my save.
You'll feel so bad. Oh. Hey, before we take a break, it is that time to talk about our giveaway. So here's what you need to do. Hop onto any social media platform and tag our parent account, NerdSloth Creative, with the hashtag roguelike. Again, look for NerdSloth Creative on almost any social media platform. We're just NerdSloth on Blue Sky. And tag us using the hashtag roguelike. Again, the winner is going to be announced this Saturday, and that is to win your own copy of Rogue Labyrinth on Steam. So do that thing. I was trying to come up with something witty to say, and then I biffed it. So do that thing. That's it.
Yeah. The buildup was there too. So do that thing. Okay.
If you want to play a really, really good roguelike, do that thing. There's that. Hey. There it is. I saved it, right?
Also add the hashtag do that thing. You don't have to, but it'd be funny if you did.
Power up! Hey, if you're enjoying this episode so far, do us a favor and throw us a like, a follow, share the episode or the podcast with folks who love indie games so we can get more of these game recommendations out there and support indie game devs. We also have our YouTube channel at youtube.com/nerdsloth, where you can catch us playing more indie games or check out our top 5 and top 10 series for even more indie game recommendations, because we believe there's an indie game out there for everyone.
Steven, we need to tell people about Nice Games Club, our game development podcast.
Okay.
You know, the one where we talk programming and design, but also how games fit in our culture?
Yes, I've heard of it.
Mark, what else can we say?
How about how we
have more than 400 episodes in the archives? We've interviewed folks behind Monkey Island,
Baba Is You,
Opus Magnum,
and more.
If you say so.
But you two also make games, right?
Speak for yourself, Lydia, but also yes.
So we don't just talk about the industry, we also talk about the games we're making.
Yep, that's it.
Nice Games Club. Listen at nicegames.club or wherever you get your podcasts.
Combo! Let's talk about some other indie games we've been playing this week. I want to talk to you about Flickshot Rogues.
Oh, yes. I saw that came out. I'm so curious.
Oh, dude. This game is sick. So Flickshot Rogues is a physics-based roguelike dungeon crawler with a pirate theme, which is so apt because the day we're recording this is Talk Like a Pirate Day, which, like, I haven't done at all. So, like, I don't know. Arg! There you go. So, so first off, you know the roguelike formula. We've talked about it a lot. You know, you get your hero, pick your path, battles, relics, upgrades, tried and true formula, right? Where this gets really interesting is you are flicking your hero around the arena where each battle is contained, like a pinball or like the cue ball from like pool or something. When I first learned about this and was really excited a couple weeks ago, I compared this to Lords of Disconia from UFO 50, and it is a similar concept, but this has so much more nuance to it for sure. So different heroes will have different abilities and effects when they knock into enemies. Like maybe they do immediate damage, or maybe they just knock the enemies away, but they apply an AoE damage of some kind that won't go off until the next turn. And when that does, it will apply to other nearby enemies. Like there's this one character that if you, bump into enemies, he will then like slam this hammer down, and any enemies within like this, his little range, will get these little like bombs attached to them. So then when it's the end of the enemy's next turn, those little bombs attached to them will go off and it will hit any other enemies that are nearby. So it's like, even though he doesn't do any initial damage, you might be doing more damage to more enemies in the long run. So that's really cool. It's a real cool give and take. So you're also actually like, you're not just picking a character at the start. You are collecting heroes during your run, and then you can swap between them on the fly at any time. So you could get into a battle. You could choose your AoE hero first, kind of like, let's say, the one I just talked about. Use him to get like, let's say his bombs on folks. That does some damage to like a whole bunch of enemies. And then you could immediately on your next turn switch to your other hero that does like heavier damage to a single target and like pick someone off that's like weakened because of what your other hero just did. That is makes for a lot of like really, really cool strategy ideas. And again, on top of that, using physics, since this is a very physics-based game, it means you could possibly hit a target multiple times if you bounce into them more than once, which just, you know, amplifies the amount of strategy that you could do during this game. On top of that, there's also lots of possible modifiers. Some of the most powerful ones also will come with curses, so there's a trade-off. There's big boss battles, and like, okay, this is silly, but like one of the most satisfying things too, like in this game for me, is that when you are aiming your character, it's like very tactile. Like you will see almost like a little kind of like a crossbow looking image kind of show up when you're like aiming. And it'll like, you know, show like an arrow of like where your character's going to go, what it can bounce off of, whatever. But like you're lining up your shot, and as you're like rotating that thing around and moving it in and out to see like, you know, how far you want to fling that character, it is making the most satisfying clickety clackety noises you've ever heard. So like the entire time, like every time I'm just like, ooh, I like that. It's like some sort of ASMR thing for me. I don't know. I didn't realize that was a thing for me. Just clickety clackities, but I'm loving it.
When you're aiming, are you seeing a path, or is it just like you angle yourself and just pray to the physics gods?
No, you're seeing a path. So you'll see like a dotted line and stuff like that. And I mean, there's always that chance that like, depending on like how hard you pull back on the thing, you might overshoot things a little bit. Plus, it's like if you like, depending on what you're going to bounce into, it might, depending on like what angle you hit, you might like fling off a little bit differently if you bounce into like other things. So you might not always end up where you're projected to end up, right? Because that's, you know, it's just physics, baby. For the most part, it feels pretty accurate. So you get a pretty good idea of where you're going to go. Especially like that first initial bounce, like if you're bouncing into a wall or something, like you're going to go exactly where that thing says you're going to go. It's just like, once you bounce into an enemy or something, that's where things can get a little dicey and like, okay. I don't know, maybe I like
that as a compromise, because I wouldn't want it to tell me exactly where I'm going to end up if I'm colliding with anything other than like, you know, the natural boundaries, the walls.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, show me where I'm generally trying to go, and I will just, like, the rest is me trying to just navigate it myself. Like, okay, I think if I go here, I'll bounce off these two and go this way and et cetera, et cetera. I think that's a cool compromise of not giving me too much information, but also not just letting me fly freely and failing every time.
Yeah. And they let you get pretty precise with like how you want to set things up too. Like if you did the tutorial, they'll show you like how to do it. They'll let you do it. Then they'll show you how to be more precise. And like, if you do a mouse and keyboard, they'll be like, okay, you can use your mouse wheel and like be way more precise about like where your character ends up and stuff. And again, depending on what you are hitting and bouncing off of, you might end up flying somewhere else, right? But yeah, it's cool. But because of all that, it is a difficult game, honestly. It is very fun, but it is difficult, especially because it is physics-based. I mean, you can't always predict things. One of the things that does make it more difficult is like when you get into different biomes, because at first you can just bounce wherever, right? You can hit whatever wall, you'll run into enemies, whatever. That's fine. The boss battles are definitely really difficult, but super, super fun. The second biome that you get into, which is kind of like a jungle-ish sort of biome, then it starts introducing like traps and hazards and stuff within the arenas themselves. So like there might be like spiked walls that's like, okay, I can't bounce everywhere because then I'm going to take damage. And it's not like you take a little damage, you'll take quite a bit of damage. Or you might have enemies that can target you like no matter where you are on the map. So it's like, okay, then you have to start choosing like how to prioritize and stuff some of the like enemies that you're going after, because they'll introduce this idea of like there's these kind of like captain enemies, and it's like, oh, if I take him out, then all the other mobs that are attached to him that he commands will all get defeated if I can just take this guy out. So why wouldn't I just go for this guy? But then all of a sudden you get all these other mobs that can target you no matter where you are on the screen. And so if I'm like in like the top right corner and that's in the top left and the captain thing is in the bottom right, it's like, okay, do I want to try to go after the captain and take everything out? Even though it's going to take me multiple times to try to take this captain out, I'm going to take a lot of damage from that thing that can target me from across the screen. Or do I want to try to make my way over to that other thing, take that thing out, possibly prolong the battle, and that captain might end up summoning even more creatures? You know, so there's a lot of strategy that goes into it. It's pretty ingenious.
Sounds fun. I mean, looks great too. And I do love a good challenge.
Yeah.
So I was already very into just the idea of this. So to hear that it's actually got a good level of difficulty to it makes it all the more enticing.
Yeah, man, I had a blast playing this. I played it like, so I started with the demo and I played it multiple times and just kept trying to see how far I could get. The artwork is so good. I love that so much. And again, those clickety-clackety noises, I can't get enough of it. So developed by Butter by the Fish. That's the dev name, Butter by the Fish.
Butter by the Fish. Is this their first game?
I think
it looks like it.
I think so. Yeah.
At least it's the only one listed. Yeah.
Retails for $14.99, cool. Currently on sale. So why not? Go for it.
Yeah, $13.49. I'm in.
Do it. The next game I want to talk about, I'm going to try to do this much, much quicker. Less is more with this one. This is called Eclipsium. I messaged you after I played this one that I'm going to have nightmares for the rest of my life because of this game, and it's very true. This is a 3D, but it's like a dithered pixel art style psychological horror walking sim where you're playing as someone called the Wanderer walking through this surreal, I don't know, man. Dream, alternate reality, nightmare, I don't know. In search of her. That's all you really get as far as like the setup. You're searching for her. Who is her? I don't know. You tell me. You're going to be wandering through tunnels, caves, hospitals, ruined cathedrals, seeing things. So playing this, wandering through the cave and seeing that first representation of her or what I think was her. Holy crap, was I creeped out. Oh my God. Like in that kind of way where sometimes if you're watching like a horror movie in the movie theater and you feel yourself reflexively like sitting back in your chair and just really digging yourself back into the backrest of it. That was me playing this game. And like, I kind of feel like anyone that played the demo or plays this game, you know exactly the moment I am talking about when you get like through that tunnel. There's a very specific instance. Less is better with this one. Go into this blind. It's hard to describe anyway, because it's just like, it feels like a fever dream, but the visuals, the soundscape, especially, and the things you run into, it is the most unnerved I have felt playing a game this entire year. Like not scared or scary in like a jump scare kind of way, just unnerved in the idea that like, it felt like this was a game that was observing me instead of me observing it. So this was developed by House Fire Games. It released today, as of recording this, on the 19th. Retails for $12.99. This is a great game to add for your library for spooky season.
I mean, it looks pretty cool. It's so hard for me to get into like a walking sim, though, which is... like, that. Then that's nothing against people who like walking sims, but like, yeah. Just hearing that just sounds like... too cozy for me my preferences.
Trust me, there ain't nothing cozy about this. Like, you will not feel cozy.
I mean, I mean horror, even in and of itself, horror games are just kind of weird for me. As much as I love horror movies and the horror genre, I think I'm so desensitized because of all the horror that I've seen that like the games don't really have the effect I think they're supposed to. But I'm sure it's great for what it is.
Yeah, it's not a game of action. This is a game of surreal psychological horror experience. And it, man, does it nail it.
Well, kudos to you for making it through.
Thanks.
I guess.
I peed myself a little, but I did it.
So I have still, just for a brief Silk Song update, because I know people are still, you know, playing that, I hope, because it's still amazing.
Oh, yeah.
I am about 30 hours in now.
Oh, my
and
God.
I don't know how far I am as far as, like... Like, I'm at a point right now where I'm fighting something that feels like it could be, like, last boss-esque, but I feel like it's a red herring for something else. I don't know that that's true, so I'm not spoiling anything because I'm clueless, but I'm pretty deep into things, but there is a lot that I still am not able to explore, I think, just because I don't quite have the mobility to get to certain areas. And maybe finishing this fight is what will unlock that for me so I can continue progressing. But so far it has been, man, such a fun ride. I am loving it. I was fighting that one thing I was talking about last episode way too early. That's why it was so hard for me.
Oh, okay.
Because now everything like still feels challenging, but it feels a lot more fair, especially with all the different movement options I have and the variety of kind of builds you can go for. My preference is usually always going to be the kind of slower, more powerful swings, but it's not even like more powerful as much as it is just like your fast attacks and your slow attacks do the same amount of damage per hit, but it's mainly the bonuses that they add that are the differentiator between them. So the one I'm using now is like a slower swing, but it gives me more silk than the faster swing would in return from enemies. So that's where it's like a trade-off if I just want to just collect my silk quicker and do my other abilities faster. So it's a whole thing. But anyway, Silk Song's great. I don't know how close I am to beating it, but I can't be like super far. I've progressed a lot and I've enjoyed every minute of it. Past that, I played one today called Heroes Against Time. I played the demo of that.
Oh, I haven't heard of this one.
So this one is like a kind of unassuming, very like, it's a roguelike, but it's like a party-based, like if you think about like classic RPG kind of thing, you set up your party, you start out as just this basic hero guy, and you collect up to two other party members as you progress through this level. And I don't know how deep it really goes. So what you're doing is like you're avoiding this fog that's enclosing every four moves. The fog will get closer and closer, and you're in like a square based a grid system where you're walking to these different things. You can see what the next one is as you arrive to it. It can either be an enemy, like a chapel or something that lets you kind of push your luck a little bit, where it's like you can get more resources, you can get more health that way, get more attack with your hero, et cetera, et cetera. But the more you do that, it spins a turn every time you dig deeper into those little like dungeon chapel things. So it's like you don't, it's kind of like a risk reward of like, how far do I want to push it? How far can I push it before this fog is going to engulf me? Because you instantly die when the fog closes in on you.
Oh,
so
dang.
It's like you have to like keep out of it. And at the very end of this, like, and these are pretty quick too, because you are just kind of forced up to the upper right hand corner as the fog's closing in. You'll get to a boss, like I can't remember what his name was, but he's like the like Time Lord or something like that. And he is essentially the final boss of at least this spot. I don't know if there's anything after that or like how quickly you can actually like what happens after you beat it in the actual game. In the demo, it's just like, cool, you beat the boss with this one character and now you have all these other characters you've collected along the way. And it said like 1 of 10 you've beaten it with. So I don't know if you have to beat it with every character and then something else happens, or if that's just the, you know, the 100% stat or state or what. You do get different color palettes. It starts out with this like Game Boy-esque kind of thing, more grayish, I guess, but
that.
It's very monochromatic.
Yeah. Old
in
school
that way,
Boy.
But there are different palettes, but the palettes, interestingly enough, are like unlockables. So it's like as you do, because like when I beat my first run of it, at least in the demo, I got like a red palette that I can now put over it instead of the gray one. And it looks like there are some that like really change it up even more so than that. But the gameplay is very, very simple, but in the same way that, like, you know, a game like Overlooting or what was the other kind of recent one? He Is Coming. Yeah. In the same way where it's like a simple concept, but it just gets kind of addicting in the way that it's like, I'm trying to like not min-max my party, but I'm trying to like get the most effective build I can with the RNG of this like layout and make my party as like good as it can be to reach that point, to reach the boss at the end. And again, I don't know like how far it goes after you beat that last boss. I'm sure there's more to it and I'm just getting like the demo experience. But even so far, like that is cool enough to where I'm like, I might actually like purchase this because it was a surprise to me. And it only has 10 reviews right now on Steam, but I like super enjoyed it. I don't even know how I found out about it. I think I just randomly ran into it, looking through like what games are coming out like last week. And so I added it to my, or at least downloaded the demo because I saw it was coming out soon. And it was just today I tried it out and I'm like, man, this is actually really fun in a way that it's simple, but complex enough to where it makes me feel smart if I get to a point and I'm like, yeah, I did good. Hey, I did real good.
I love those games that make me feel smart. Let me tell you. Hey, it just released on the 18th. It's a really cheap price point, $7.49. Currently on sale as we record right now for $5.99. That's a steal. Looks fantastic. Like, I love the sprite designs on these. Especially that golem that looks suspiciously like Juggernaut from the X-Men, which I really, really appreciate.
There are like random occurrences that can happen as you go to these like exclamation points. You don't know what those are going to be. So it's like, it could hurt you. It could be something that is specific to the kind of like, you know, class member or party member you have. Like some things like, oh, I had a bard in my party. So when I hit this campsite, she was able to play a song and it gave all of my characters +3 attack, like permanent attack. So it's like, oh, cool. And so you have your starting character. The other two you collect, like, well, all the characters have like specific things. Like one is a berserker. He starts with like 0 attack and I don't like 6 health, I think. And as he, so the health, the way that works is it's a collective health of your 3 party members. So if you have like 777, you have 21 health. So it's not like you're losing party members. It's just you have your collective party health. And then when that runs out, obviously you lose the run. But you're not losing party members. So the way his works is like, okay, he comes in with a decent amount of health, but he has no attack power. But every time your party takes damage, he gains 2 permanent attack. So if enemies are fighting back against you, he's getting stronger and stronger and carries that throughout the rest of the run.
That's
so it's
sick.
Like with him in your party, you almost want, it incentivizes you to get into more fights so that you can really kind of maximize him as much as possible. And to help out with that, if you have a healer on your team that can actually adapt to, like the one healer that I saw, at least in my run, was like every time you start a battle, she heals for 6, heals your party for 6. And so it's like, okay, cool. So I can kind of like make this where it's like every time I get in the battle, I'm going to heal 6 and I can then take more damage so that I can power up my berserker. So it's sort of a combo of things to make it all work out. And there are, even in the few characters that were available in the demo, which I think were 10, and even just watching the trailer as I'm looking at it right now on Steam, like I can see there's way more than the demo had. Like I didn't see that, there wasn't a golem or anything, or these little fairies that I see, or any of that in the demo. So clearly there's a ton here that I had not experienced. And that excites me even more because I would even have been fine paying like $5 or $6 for the experience that I just had. But knowing that it's even deeper than that makes me very excited and really want to go back into it.
It's crazy. It's basically a roguelite JRPG, which is such a cool idea.
Yeah. If you were playing it on like a Game Boy.
Yeah. Sold. I love it. That's such a good idea for such a cheap price too.
Yeah.
Sold.
Definitely wanted to shout it out because, again, doesn't have much attention yet, but I think it deserves it.
Absolutely. It does. Solo dev, it looks like. So definitely let's give him a shout out for sure.
Final round.
Let's talk about some upcoming indie games we're excited about. I've got a few that I want to mention, but there's 2 games that I'm excited to play. I really want to play that I almost played for this week and I stopped myself because we would run out of time and I ran out of time to play them anyway. Arctic Awakening, and no, I'm not human. So Arctic Awakening for the vibes, it's an atmospheric puzzle walking sim. Of course, one of my favorite genres that you would hate. But no, I'm not human. It's another creepy horror game. I did play the demo a long time ago, but I wanted to play more of it again to refresh myself for the 1.0 release. But I ran out of time because I played, you know, plenty of other games. But it's really good, super disturbing. Just like probably going to try to play them anyway this week, regardless of if we bring them into the podcast or not. Both real cool games. Here's the two that I really, really want to bring up this episode, though. This is called Pigeon's Mission. This is an adorable, vibrant pixel art platformer about a pigeon that's on a quest to save his parents. And one of the reasons I wanted to bring attention to this one isn't just the game, but the developers. So the developers are a little boy and his dad, which is the cutest thing ever. So when they started developing this game, the little boy was only 6 years old. He did like a whole bunch of drawings and stuff like that, that his dad helped him turn into, like, you know, the sprites and everything. And they've been working on this together for the last couple of years. The little guy streamed it the other day for the first time. It looks really cool. I just think that's such a cool thing. Like, especially like for the, you know, the future, like thinking about like future state for game development and stuff like that, like getting kids into game development already is such a cool idea, and what a cool hobby. So kudos to this dad, major kudos to this kid for helping develop such a cool looking game. So it says quarter four, but from what I understand, so I talked to the dad a little bit on TikTok, seems like it's going to be November within that, but don't have like a complete release date set in stone. But it's on Steam. You can wish list it, and I recommend so because it looks so cool.
Man, that does look really awesome. It's like, right? It definitely reminds me of like Super Nintendo games, but like definitely higher fidelity graphics in that.
Yeah.
The animation looks super fluid, and the gameplay just looks fun. I love the way the enemies are designed too. Yeah. I would have been into this even had I not known the backstory to it, but now knowing that, it makes me even, I guess, want to play it even more.
So wholesome. Yeah, man. Yeah. It's so good.
That's so awesome.
I did forget, there is one more game I do want to bring up to you really quick, which is called Scrabdackle. So I learned about this one, well, actually, two different ways. So the 6-1 Indie Showcase was this past week. There were so many good games that I added to my wish list. I was watching it live. If you were on their page watching it on YouTube, if you were watching the chat, you probably saw me chatting it up with everybody about these fantastic games. One I wanted to bring up, though, is this one, Scrabdackle. One, because the dev emailed us like right before the show went on about the game, and I didn't get a chance to read their email until afterwards, and I got all excited. I was like, oh, you just emailed me, and I saw like their game being shown, and I'm like, okay. Two, Joseph, you're gonna love this game. Scrabdackle is this adorable looking 2D open world Souls-like game being developed by Jake Friend, which is the developer, about a novice wizard named Blue who gets literally thrown out of the Wizarding Academy physically when it is attacked and flung far away, and now has to make the long journey back across the unfamiliar landscape. If you ever wondered if there could ever be such a thing as a cozy looking Souls-like, yes, because they did it. This is it. This is the one.
Yeah, that does look cool. I mean, I'm always into Souls-likes, so I will give this one a shot for sure. The one I want to bring up right now is called Mala Petaka. I don't even know if that's
say
how
what?
You say it, but... M-A-L-A-P-E-T-A-K-A. But the art of this, it's a like a 2D pixel art shooter sci-fi FPS.
There's a lot of keywords.
It looks so cool though. Like graphically, it looks awesome. The gameplay looks fun. And I'm just super into the art of it. That and the how fast paced it looks. It just looks like a kind of a satisfying throwback game to a lot of the FPS games I used to play when I was younger. Like it has like I guess Doom inspired, but obviously a lot more like cartoonish as far as the graphics go.
Yeah.
So yeah, it just looks super cute and fun. So this is one that I don't know a ton about, but the colorful like pixel graphics really drew me in visually. It comes out on September 25th, so pretty soon.
Rock on, man. Yeah, that'll be out by the next episode for sure, I think. So, hell yeah.
Also, one I played in the Steam Next Fest recently that I saw was, I mean, there's a ton that I played in Steam Next Fest that are coming out soon, but I want to bring this one up because I really liked it. It was, well, hold on. Now I'm wondering if this is the same one. Yes. So Hotel Barcelona. I talked about it before.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one that's from the creators of Deadly Premonition and No More Heroes. And it's just like a kind of creepy looking, like visually kind of acid trippy look to it. But it, the combat of it was really fun. It's a like a side-scrolling hack and slash. And I just remember really enjoying what I played of it. I remember one of the bosses I fought was like a big zombie football player dude. He was a like a baseball player, I think, because I remember him having like a big bat or something. I don't know. It was just like wild in the funnest of ways. And the gameplay was like a fun challenge. So action roguelike, of course, because that's what I love.
It's your bread and butter.
Hotel Barcelona, just calling it out because I had played it before, so I can vouch for it.
Game over.
Well, hey, if you had a good time listening to this episode, stick around for the bumper to learn how you can help support the show and all the things we do here at Nerds on Creative. You can also check the show notes for our link tree, which will take you to our social media, Discord, merch store, and tons of other cool stuff. But get in touch with us. Let us know what indie games you're playing and help us elevate these games so we can help support indie game devs. And don't forget about the giveaway for Rogue Labyrinth. If you forgot, here's your reminder. Tag us on any social media with the hashtag roguelike. That's game over for us. My name's Chris.
I'm Joseph.
And we'll continue on the next episode. The hopefully shorter next episode.
I know. Don't stop playing like 5 games.
I only played 3.
Continue.
Indie Game Arcade is recorded and produced by Nerd Sloth Creative. If you're looking for more gaming content, head over to youtube.com/nerdsloth for indie game let's plays and recommendations. If you'd like to support the show, head over to patreon.com/nerdsloth, where you can select a pledge and receive access to hundreds of hours of bonus content from everything at Nerd Sloth Creative. If you're an indie game developer and would like us to review your game or explore other opportunities, send an email to nerdslothcreative@gmail.com with the subject line Indie Game Arcade. Thanks for listening, and keep supporting indie game devs.